Well, good morning. Looks like people are still looking for a couple of seats, so we'll give them just a moment. Welcome to Security and Windows Store Apps. My name is Josh Dunn. I'm a senior program manager, and I'm with the store security team. And I want to spend some time today talking a little bit about putting our security hat on as developers when we think about developing for the Windows Store. Now, before we dive right into the content, I do have an apology to make. When slots are assigned for these, there's two slots as a speaker I never want. The first slot that I don't want is the guy standing between you and the exit. You know, at the end of the day, lots of content, lots to think about, and people start getting tired and brains are getting full. But there's one other slot I like even less, and that's the slot of the guy standing between you and your food. So I want to apologize for being the guy between you and the food. I'm going to try and move through this as quickly as possible, get through the content that we have, hopefully leave you with some helpful information, kind of shift your thinking a little bit as you think about security, and then you guys can head off and have some lunch. After the discussion here, we're going to try and leave some time for Q&A. If the time is short, my helpers and I, Mike and Chris, we're going to be over in Mount St. Helens room afterwards for about a half hour. So if this sparks some thought and you want to have a more detailed discussion or you have other questions, we'll be there and available for you. So what are we going to cover? The first part of this is really talking about security in a slightly different way than you're accustomed to. Most of the time when you get up and talk about security, we start getting into exploits and vulnerabilities and all kinds of detailed information. We're going to look at some of that. But I want to tie security to something important as we start thinking about Windows Store apps, which is customer confidence. So we're going to spend some time explaining why there's a relationship between these two and why you as a developer need to take both the security and the customer confidence seriously as you develop your Windows Store apps. There we go. Avoiding optimistic mistakes. That's the next thing we're going to talk about. There's a lot of optimism around development today. We've made it easier than ever. If you've been playing with the new Visual Studio that's designed for Windows Store apps, you've found you could quickly and easily get things done. In fact, we've had a good time putting together our demo. All kinds of flexibility there. And some of the pieces here we want to make sure that you have in mind is, as you're blazing through this and developing new apps, that you avoid letting your optimism get you into trouble. Second, we want to talk about choosing capabilities carefully. So if you're familiar with capabilities, there are dozens of them. You have a bunch of things that you can do that expand the functionality of your app, add webcam capability, add all kinds of access to customer resources. And these are places where, when tied with security and with confidence, we need to make some careful choices. And the last topic for today is properly handling customer data. If you guys have been watching the news, data leaks are some of the things you hear about all the time, right? Customers are concerned about sharing their data with people because they're concerned that data in turn will get shared with somebody they don't want to have it. And then, as I mentioned, I'll try and leave some time for Q&A. We have a lot of content, so don't panic. I don't want to cut anybody short. We'll be available over in St. Helens room afterwards. So let's talk a little bit about security and customer confidence. So the big meta point here is that customer confidence leads to worry-free app acquisition. That's the sense we want our customers to have when they come to the Windows Store. They want to see an app that has a flashy look to it, looks like fun, or is a cool app that's going to solve one of the problems that they have. We want to make sure that they are encouraged and excited about just going and trying an app without worry. For you as a developer, that means lots of eyes on your app, lots of people consuming your app, lots of people hopefully paying for your app, whether that's advertising, whether that's a paid-for app, or whether that is something like a freemium app where you're going to add on content later. And so the confidence that I'm talking about is directly related to our first topic, following secure coding practices. So making sure that as you develop your app, you're keeping in mind some of these little pitfalls, we call them optimistic mistakes, and rooting that out of your apps before you send them out to customers. Second, customers expect apps to behave in a particular way. The platform has been designed so the customers don't have to worry about installing and uninstalling apps and having the state of their machine changed. And so we'll talk a little bit about using that expected behavior in the use of capabilities. And finally, apps respecting customers' data. As I mentioned, data is very important. It's very much in the news. There's a lot of legal issues around it, and we want to make sure you're thinking about those as you develop your app. So as I said, the end goal is customers should acquire apps without worry. Lots of customers means lots of revenue, and that's what we want to see. That's what developers want to see, and I want you to have that opportunity. And so using simple, common sense principles applied to the app security is going to protect that customer confidence. And reinforcing that customer confidence on your app as well as across the entire store is what's going to result in people consuming your apps. The last piece is leverage principle of least privileges for app capabilities. I already kind of mentioned that. We'll go through that in a little more detail. There's a little bit of confusion that I want to help clear up in the choosing of a capability and how to use a capability. And then, as I'm just talking over my points again, handle customer data responsibly. So optimistic mistakes. I purposely chose optimism because optimism is something that I personally am known for. I always see the best in things. I always see the best in opportunities. And back in my early career at Microsoft, I was a part of the Windows Update team. And we were just getting started. Windows 2000 was on its way out the door. We had a very exciting beta program that we wanted to start for folks. And so we went out and purchased some extra hardware. We were going to set that hardware up. We're going to get a collection of our enthusiastic users, shift them over to it, let them play with the new look and feel, let them play with the new model. And I was really optimistic. I was like, we're going to get a ton of customers. We're really going to make a difference here. So I went down to the lab with my ops engineer buddy. His name was Rob. Rob and I walk into the lab. We start racking boxes. Rack the boxes in, light them up, plug in the internet connection. And the moment we plugged in the internet connection, Rob is looking at the console, and people are starting to connect to the server. I looked at Rob, and I said, Rob, what's going on? We haven't even put a DNS name in front of the server yet. We haven't published the IP. Nobody knows the beta is coming. How do they know we're here? How do they even know we racked this server? He got kind of a sly smile on his face. He'd been on the front lines for a while. He kind of smiled and said, well, come here, let me show you something. And he opened up the IIS log and started to show me all the different things that people were doing. And every known attack against IIS was being played against that server, even before we'd announced the beta, even before we had a DNS name in front of that IP address. And he said, Josh, here's what you got to understand. People out there know our IP range. They know we're constantly putting old hardware out, putting new hardware in, and they watch for changes. And when they see those changes, they just go and try everything they know how to do, every trick in the book. And from that day forward, my optimism was a little dampened. I was like, wow, people aren't playing nice. And I want you to walk away understanding that people aren't always going to be playing nice. It may be hard to believe with the weather that we're having right now, but for 80 days, we had no rain here in Washington. Now, I've lived here over 30 years. I have never seen that. And it was pretty amazing. And you can imagine all the cars out in the parking lot, sun blazing down. You might crack your windows just a little bit to leave some air flow through the car so you don't come out and sit down in that 3,000-degree seat and burn yourself. And thinking about that, leaving that window cracked, is leaving an opportunity for something bad to happen. So you can imagine, you could crack your windows, but you certainly wouldn't leave your laptop sitting on the front seat. So as people walk by, they see the laptop, cracked window, hey, this gets more interesting. And you certainly wouldn't leave the keys to the ignition in the ignition, right? So when people walk by. And you can imagine, the more interesting the car is, the more attention you're going to get. So I want you to keep that image in your mind as we walk through these optimistic mistakes. Because as your app develops popularity and people begin to trust you and download it, you start to look less and less like a 1990 Toyota Corolla and a lot more like a Ferrari. So first note, customers expect apps to be alive, dynamic, and deeply interactive. You want to win in this space, you want to distinguish yourself, you're going to have something that draws people's attention in. Flashy games, all kinds of great content. And in order to satisfy those, you're going to have to consume real-time data. You're going to have to pull in feeds. You're going to have to consume content from cloud services. And whether you're doing this as a social media outlet, or whether you're doing this as a game, or whether you're doing this as some other type of service, you're going to be forced to do this to compete. And customers want to see this. This is what distinguishes a great app from a static, kind of normal run-of-the-mill app. And this is where that trusting of the cloud, that's the first expression of optimism and the most common mistake. Just like in my Windows Update days, when I went and racked those servers and was all excited to get started and saw that people aren't playing nice, people are not going to play nice then, they don't play nice now. So be aware of that. Think about the fact that your window is down, so to speak, on your car. Don't leave your laptop sitting on the front seat. I want to talk about two examples of optimistic code, and we'll walk into a demo here that I think will demonstrate the things we're talking about. So the first one, and they just kind of run together, so I'll just tip my hat here and show you what we're talking about. The first one is going to be an optimistic exec unsafe local function, and the second one is going to be an optimistic eval. So we'll look at these two. They flow right into one another. When we do the demo, I'll explain the difference between the two and how they're being used and or abused by the bad players out there. So you'll notice that this conversation is really going to be focused in on web apps, on applications built using HTML5 and JavaScript. One of the new players to the game is your ability to take your already well-seasoned development skills on the web and bring them directly into the Windows App Store. In fact, for me personally, that's the most exciting part, right? It's a lot of fun. And when you think about dynamic and you think about consuming content from the cloud, the first place you're going to go is all the websites and the familiar day-to-day things you do already. And so when Chris and Mike and I were talking about this demo and talking about this opportunity, we decided, well, that's the direction we're going to go. And so for us, we decided that we were first of all going to demo using a web app, because that's where you're going to find some of these optimistic issues, and also because we felt like the world needed one more social application to share your social commentary and information with others. So introducing for the first time, my newest creation, thank you Mike and Chris for your help, Blat. Blat is your opportunity to just trumpet out all those interesting things that you have on the top of your mind, any pictures you might share and things like that. This is the place to go do it. One of the things that's nice here is because this is a Windows app, I can directly access a bunch of interesting things, things like capabilities, things like webcam. So let me log in and let's take a look at what this app is capable of. So logging in, not a lot of interesting stuff here, but because it's a Windows app, looking at the app bar, I have some options here. I can refresh. This is intended to be an interactive tool, so I can refresh the content and look and see what my friends and family are up to. I can make a new Blat, say something interesting to the world. I can change users, and I can reset my status. So we're going to start with making a Blat. Since we're standing up here, one of the cool things I mentioned is the integration with the webcam. So here, I'm being asked, this is part of that confidence story, the app just can't grab my webcam and start taking pictures of me, I'm going to go ahead and allow that. So the camera's going to light up, here's me, I'm going to say hi to my mom, hi mom, and I can add that to my text here. All right, and let's throw that up there for the world to see. Awesome. If my mother was watching, she would be very proud of me. Here I am on the big screen. It's kind of, I got my inspiration from watching all the big football players. You see these guys are 300-pound linemen, and the camera goes by. Who's the first person they say hi to? Always, right? They're always saying hi to mom. Here we're going to show you another piece of the functionality. Not only can I capture from my webcam, I can also use the file picker to go in and grab some files from my local machine. So here I've got some pictures in my picture folder. So I'll just grab this first image I see and throw it up there. All right. That's a little hard to see on this screen, but I'm not sure I want to share that with the world. A lampshade on my head and a cat climbing all over me is probably not the image I want to portray here. So let's try a different one. Let's throw up the other picture I have. All right, ready to demo. That was this morning. All smiley and fresh-faced, ready to go. Let's throw that up in the air for people to see. All right, now my community blasts are complete. I'm sharing some of these ideas, sharing some of these great pictures. Now, Mike and Chris, as I mentioned, have been helping with this demo. One of the things they're helping with is they're going to throw up some of their content and let us take a look at that and see what they're doing. So we'll throw that in there and see what the community's up to. All right. There's Mike and Chris. So Chris, picture with his webcam showing some robots. Chris is a big fan of robots. Mike, obviously, I think that's his next ride. We talked about Ferraris and Corollas. Mike's a John Deere man. You'll see it outside. Mike also has a Windows 8 cam or Windows cam that he needs a driver for. So if any of you guys recognize this camera and have a driver of your own, please go ahead and get in touch with Mike in the back. He'd appreciate it. And one thing we always tell Chris is that he does have a beautiful mug. And so there's Chris's mug. So let's look at the community now that it's public. Publish this app to the store, other people are going to start interacting. And here I have somebody who's calling themselves Mr. Hack. Now, I mentioned people aren't going to play nice. When your app goes out there, people are going to start poking at it and trying to figure out what it's going to be able to do. And here, Mr. Hack is inviting a customer to go and click on whatever his comment is. Now, if you look at the way that these blats are set up, I'm not really set up to capture anything but text here. But here, I've got a click me. Let's see what happens if I click it. I'm not connected to the internet. Now let's connect to the internet and let's give it a try. I've got it right here. Oops. There we go. That was fast. All right. Well, I think Mr. Hack is a political activist. He's busy letting us know what his choice for the President of the United States is going to be. I think we could all get behind the Hello Kitty ticket. So clearly he's added a clickable link there. And I clicked it and took it out there. Now, because this is a public app, any one of my customers who's using this app is going to see that same link, and they may be drawn in to go click it. Now, thinking about it just a little bit, maybe that's a feature. Maybe I made a mistake here when I was designing it. This might be an opportunity. So instead of having that, you could have a picture to the demo, and then Mike and Chris could take a bunch of pictures for me. I could put them in a share location, and they could include a link to go get pictures to the rest of the demo, all the people that we were talking to, all the cool things we saw. Now, if we continue looking at the community, I'm gonna let that slide for now. And here we go with some more community content. All right, Mr. Hack is back. But it looks like he made a mistake. He's got a broken, maybe it's not as broken as I thought it was. Now Mr. Hack has all your blats are belong to us. Now, he's also included some advertising here. Now, that original link, that was kind of cute. Go to Hello Kitty, I could put my customers anywhere I wanted. But here he's taken over the entire surface of my app. He's alternatively taunting me, and he's spamming my customers with a bunch of advertising I'm not sure my customer base is going to be interested in seeing. meetsingles.spam.contoso.com. I don't like that. So let's take a look here at where the mistake was made, because there is a piece of optimism in the way I've put my code together here. So here, this is the script in default.js where I'm getting these messages, and I'm taking the text that is being placed beneath the photo for customers to see, and I've wrapped it in exec unsafe local function. I mentioned that's the first place here. I think just for you to remember from here, if you remember one thing, if it says unsafe in the API, that should give you a little pause. My little note is if you use exec safe on local exec unsafe local function, it means your safety net is gone. And here's the mistake I made. I was intending text. I wrapped it in exec unsafe local function, and now instead of passing this to some sanitized function, I'm passing it to inner HTML. And that's allowed Mr. Hack to go in and insert markup language and script into my tags instead of just including the text that I'd originally intended. Thankfully, and isn't it always this way in demos, my saving code is just sitting right there. Instead of being optimistic, trusting my content, trusting my servers, I really intended that just to be text, because all of my assumptions thereafter obviously got me into a lot of trouble. And so now I meant text, I'm going to leave it as text, and we'll sanitize it using inner text. So let's restart the application after making that change and see if that helps. All right. Now, this time, no advertising, no spamming, no taunting me. And you'll see if you look at the screen, what was originally tags that he was injecting into those text areas are now just inner text. Now I can see the text. It's not pretty, right? I'll ask my partners on the server side to clean those up at some point in time so I don't have to look at Mr. Hack anymore. But now I'm no longer letting him come in and put these contents back in, and when I consume them from the server, I'm not getting owned, and my customers are not seeing the content I never intended them for to see. So let's pretend I posted that as an update. New versions up in the store. I haven't cleaned the server off yet, but let's let the community continue to interact. Uh-oh. That looks even worse, right? That escalated really quickly. Back to my embarrassing picture. I've got my lampshade back on my head. And here, he's been able to even give me an alert inside of my app. I uploaded this random file from your device. Also, I happen to notice in your account and password, build 2012. Thanks for playing. And now my app is no longer my app. Now here, he noticed that he found something on my device. Now you saw previously I was using the file picker to go and accomplish the things that I was doing, yet somehow he went into my pictures folder and he got it. As I mentioned, capabilities are to be chosen wisely. And here, if we look at the manifest for Blat, you'll see that I've selected the pictures library. The pictures library is how he's doing this. Not only did he figure out how to inject some arbitrary code in there, but because I have the pictures library, he just reached in and grabbed the first photo he found in my pictures library and posted it up there, even though I prefer that photo was not there. So I'm going to remove that. And let's see if that helps us with that particular piece of the problem. We'll restart the app. Now, because I've made a change to the manifest, the package is being reinstalled. So I'll just log back in again without the pictures library capability. And let's see if that fixes our problem. All right. Oops, what's going on? All right, well, it's thinking about something. Uh-oh. Well, this is where you usually insert the joke about Microsoft demos. But this is actually a good thing. You'll notice that I did hit a runtime error. That error is access denied. And so Mr. Hack is busy trying to attack my library. I've removed the library functionality, and so his attack doesn't work anymore. The problem is that now his attack has an unhandled exception in it, and I am now showing to all my customers this broken experience. And because I was debugging, you're going to see me walk through continue. Customers would have just seen a crash. The app would have disappeared. So here the server is cleaned off, and let's set the app aside for just a moment and take another look at what's going on. So here, what we did previously was we went into the manifest and we removed the picture library capability. Then in default.js, we took a look at my optimistic assumption about the message that was going to be included for customers to see. And that message was moved to intertext. That seemed to help. But as I'm thinking about it, there were two places that I talked about. One was execs unsafe local function. The second was eval. If you've been doing web development for any time, eval can be your best friend, and eval can be your worst enemy. And so if I head back to the place where I'm building up my object that contains the message, let's take a look at my notes to myself there. So here, I'm using a very tried and true pattern. If you've ever done any web development, you've probably written something very similar to that eval statement, where you're bringing in the response text from the server, and you're optimistically evaling it. Again, the note here is that I'm optimistic. I'm trusting it. This is my server. These are my customers. And now I'm just getting into trouble because I was a little optimistic, a little too trusting. The good news is that, as with all demo magic, the answer is right below me here. Instead of using eval, which had a whole different set of assumptions in the web context, now I'm going to switch to JSON.parse. Now, the beauty of that is that all of the Windows Store apps for HTML5 and JavaScript have JSON.parse built right in. You don't have to learn something new. You don't have to acquire an extra library. It's just there, and you can use it. And I would strongly encourage you to do that. Now, what I've done is I've narrowed the attack surface down. Now, I'm not going to be optimistic about that. And instead of letting him eval random content, I'm actually going to just put it into JSON.parse and remove that risk of dynamic code. Now, I've got another note here to remind myself. If you're using HTTP and JSON.parse, that's good. The best is when you have a client-server relationship, you do that over a secure socket. You use HTTPS or SSL. Then you're best. Now you don't have the problem with injection in the middle. You don't have problems with easy spoofing. You actually have to either attack the server or find another way around the client. For purposes of our demo, we're just going to leave it as HTTP. And let's restart the app and see where we landed. So as I mentioned, Mike and Chris scrambled around, removed the content. I released an update to my app that has fixed the inner HTML problem. It has fixed the pictures library access. And it's also prevented us from getting script injection through that eval statement. So let's give it a try. I'll just go grab. You'll notice, even though I removed the pictures library, I'm going to go back to my pictures library, pick that photo, and I'm going to put it back up there. It's important to note, because I did not have to have pictures library access to get back to my pictures library. That's the difference between the capability of pictures library and the file picker. You don't have to declare the library to make this happen. So now that my new version is out there, I asked Mike and Chris if they'd help me test this one more time. So we'll watch for Mike and Chris's content. Mike is still looking for that driver for his camera. Again, if you've seen this camera before and you have a driver for it, Mike's right in the back. He'd love it. And notice here, Mr. Hack is trying again. Our first fix worked, right? Now I don't have a link here to some Hello Kitty page or whatever he wanted to send my customers to. We continue down his path. He tries another tried and true. Still not working. Again, the value there is that inner HTML to text has removed his ability to inject arbitrary code there. And now let's try the last one, that eval statement moving to json.parse. And there I've refreshed the original attack that popped up the alert, stole my password and all those things, gone. He's not able to do that anymore. And so I think for the purposes of this demo, this app is now cleaned up. I can put it back out there in the world. I'm protected from those things, and we can move on. So we talked about the optimistic exec unsafe local function, and we talked about eval. But one note here, and this is something we were trying to thread through that whole discussion, it's not about trust and then verify. It's about verify and then trust. So you saw the mistake I made where I fixed the net result, the receiver on the other end of my object from eval, by taking the message and making it text. But I still did not do the thoroughness to go back and make sure the object itself was being created safely. And so make sure as you're following those threads and getting dynamic content, you're actually using all of these functions in a non-optimistic way. And before you trust it, you make sure you know where it's coming from and what you want to do with it. So the first note is I use these two because they're the most obvious offenders. But there are other offenders out there. Set interval, inner HTML, unsafe. There's a bunch of things you could be doing that cause the same problem. I've linked at the end to some talks. If you go back and look at the deck when they post it, you can go look at a talk that is really focused on these types of issues, and you can see all these different types of attacks. The next thing we talked about is that integration with json.parse. As we saw with that eval statement that was perfectly acceptable when I was a web developer, and now in a Windows Store app, the assumptions are different. And so using the WinJS framework also protects you from those type of optimistic assumptions. For example, you could probably name half a dozen right off the top of your head great third-party libraries for JavaScript that do all kinds of awesome things and make your life easier. The problem is they were created before Windows Store apps were alive. And so WinJS framework was designed for Windows Store apps from the ground up. Now, one note there, I left you with the impression that somehow your app is completely unsafe. I want you to carry some of that optimism. You actually have to use things that have the term unsafe in them and remove your safety net in order to get into those kinds of problems. WinJS is safe by default. If you don't work around it, it's going to keep you safe. It's also serviced by Microsoft. So if there are any issues that come up, whether it's a customer complaint or some sort of performance thing, we're going to continue to service this. And because it's serviced through the store, you don't have to do any additional work to protect your customers. Those updates will flow from the store, and they'll get patched without you having to go reassociate with some new third-party library or work with another organization to get it. And it's going to grow as Windows 8 grows. As our ecosystem grows, as there's more and more apps, richer and richer content, you're going to be able to just continue to enjoy this. The other note I made was this caution around working around issues in frameworks. This is true no matter which framework you choose. Frameworks that weren't specifically designed for Windows Store apps, they're built with that, or the context they were built in on the website. Some of those things aren't true any longer. And with the Windows JS framework, what you're going to find is that because you want to remove that net in order to make things work, you're going to get back into that optimistic state. You're going to remove that auto-sanitization and protection you have, and then you're going to run into problems. And if you do one thing and walk away from this talk doing some things differently in the way you code, json.parse it. It's not a perfect solution, but it is going to protect your customers far better than trying to figure out how to sanitize those strings on your own. So with that, let's talk a little bit about the capabilities. So as you guys know, capabilities lead to some great experiences for your customers. You saw that that particular capability, unfortunately, was not a great experience. Somebody was able to take advantage of my use of the capability and get into my customer's pictures library and attack them from that perspective. The rule here is that you should apply the principle of least privileges. If you don't need it, don't use it. Right? There's a bunch of folks that either are trying to make something work and they just click them all. Right? Remember the default thing? I think about this when I was working on Windows 2000. We made a bunch of assumptions about the fact that everybody's an admin on the box. And then if I tried to write some code and it didn't work, I was like, oh, just make yourself admin and it'll work. It's the same idea here. If you're having problems with something and you just start adding capabilities to make it work, you might want to go back and re-examine your assumptions. The other thing here is there are general and special use capabilities. There's a bunch of stuff that everybody can use and play with, and a bunch of things that you need to think long and hard about before you include them in your code, and we'll cover those. And then I'll highlight a little bit the two most commonly misunderstood capabilities, the Documents Library and Enterprise Auth. These two are in that group of special use capabilities, and they're very powerful. And so if you choose to use them, I want to make sure you have the very precise scenario they were intended for in mind before you put them in your package manifest and start shipping apps that have these capabilities in them. So least privilege is the rule, the principle of least privileges. It's easy to remember. If you don't need it, don't use it. In fact, because they increase the functionality of the app, as you saw with my particular demo app, it actually increases the surface area for abuse. Remember we talked about the difference between a Toyota Corolla and a Ferrari? Imagine if I didn't have access to your pictures library, but I had access to your documents library. How many of you guys have a bunch of sensitive information in your documents library you don't want to share with the social media community out there? Right? I know, for example, QuickBook, when I installed it, put my content in the documents library. That's awesome. Makes it really easy for me to find. I'm not eager to share that with other people. So it can turn what would be a normal app into something that's much more valuable to attack. And as I mentioned in the setup, be careful adding a capability to make something work. I see this all the time. The number one capability that gets added to make something work, I'm guilty of using in this very demo. Right? I'm doing an internal demo, and I have an internal server, and guess what I need? I need access to the private network. Right? Normally, you just need internet client, but to make this app work internally, I was tempted to add the internet private and internet capability. That makes it work. Now I can connect to my internal server, but if I don't want to check that box before I ship it out to the world, now if I have a corporate customer or someone has a private network inside their home, now all of a sudden my app has access to everything within their private network. You need to be very careful when you think about this. If you check that box because you couldn't access some resource and you're in testing your app and trying to get it ready to go, think carefully about unchecking that box before you ship it to the world. And then, as I said, if you don't need it, don't use it. Right? Customers have a lot of expectations for people to use great capabilities. They want to see the microphone. They want to see the webcam. They want to see you using their music library so they can build playlists. I see a lot of people come in early and go, oh, I'm going to want to do that someday. I'm going to want to make that happen. I want to include that functionality in my app. And what ends up happening is they include it right away from the start, even though they're not making use of it right now. You can update that later. When you have functionality for that, go ahead and backfill that functionality. But if you ship it out the door with that functionality inside, anybody who abuses your app is potentially going to cause problems. Additionally, it increases that customer scrutiny. They look at an app that says, I use the webcam, or they look at an app that I use the music library, and you don't use it, they're going to be left scratching their head. What? I said I use the webcam. I don't see how it uses the webcam. And it kind of erodes that confidence in your app. So general capabilities versus special use capabilities. So the difference between these two that's enforced is that general capabilities are available for every developer. So if you're a developer in here as an individual developer or you're a developer here as a business account, any of those general capabilities are free for you to use. However, the special capabilities are restricted to business accounts. So if you're not a business account and you try and use these, you're going to be prevented. The reason for that is that the scenarios around those special privileges or those special use capabilities are really built around enterprise and business scenarios. And we'll talk about those in just a second. So if I don't pound it home, I'm going to pound it home now. Regardless of special or general, make sure that you're still applying the principle of least privilege. General use capabilities expand the functionality to interact with libraries, networks, and devices. We saw that. If you had a photo viewer app and what you were going to do was help your customer manage their photo library, edit photos, and you wanted to be able to move programmatically through all the content in their pictures library, that's a really good scenario for you to have the pictures library if that's what the intent of your app is using. But if you're something like Blatt, the example we used, you don't need the pictures library to do that. We demonstrated that. Customers can still navigate to the library, pick the content that they want without incurring the extra risk of, if the app gets compromised, just sucking up all the data inside of my pictures library and putting it somewhere that I don't want it to be used or seen. And then, as I mentioned, special use capabilities are powerful. Think about admin, right? This is a set of capabilities that has the most privileges to the user's content and the user's machine. And they have very particular purposes. They're not designed for just general access. And we'll talk about the documents library in particular is one where we get into that misunderstanding. And so here's the document library. This is honestly the most over-declared capability. People have really misunderstood how this goes. Part of that is because it came out late. We didn't have a lot of good guidance around it. And so people were trying to explore. People were also just trying to make things work. We had a bunch of legacy concepts around the way that we interacted with customers' data in the desktop and the traditional model. Here in this the Windows Store app model, we've actually got a situation where the file picker is the right way to go do this. So the Documents Library is really about programmatic access to registered file extensions. So if you are an office suite of some sort or a productivity suite, and you're going to need to, just like the Photos Library, manage large numbers of documents and help customers edit them or format them or embed them inside of one another's, that's what this is for. What it's not for is creating or accessing files in the Documents Library. As I showed you with our little demo, you do not have to have the Documents Library to go get content in there. So for example, if you were writing an email client and you wanted your customer to be able to attach Word documents to their emails or other things that they would store in their Documents Library, use the file picker. Don't use the Documents Library. The Documents Library is going to be too powerful. Additionally, in order to make use of the Documents Library, you have to register for the file extension and declare yourself a handler. This leads to a lot of customer confusion. I've seen examples where developers have said, hey, I know how to handle text files, and I'm going to declare the Documents Library, and I'm going to say I handle text files. The reason they're using the text files, they're just storing some data in the Documents Library, and they're using it later to rehydrate and make the experience better for the customer. What happened is when they went down that path, they're now registered as a handler for text files. And if you don't actually handle text files, and a customer tries to open a text file after they've installed your app, and they haven't declared a default handler, you're going to be offered up as a handler for the text file. And you go, oh, I'll use this foo app to handle my text file. And in reality, what's going to happen is you're not handling text files, you're using them. And then the app is not going to know what to do, and the customer is going to be confused. And again, when customers get confused, the app behaves in uninspected ways, they're going to lose confidence in those apps. Additionally, this is one that's just going to have an impact on the overall rating you're going to receive from the community, right? If the app's doing unexpected things, not only are they going to say, I'm not so sure about that app, they're also going to say, it doesn't do what it says it does, or it confused me, or now my text files don't work the way they did before. The next one is special capabilities is enterprise authentication. If you're not an enterprise app, don't use this. This is all about using the Windows credentials to access enterprise resources programmatically. So you can imagine if you were a helper app that's going to help customers interact with their SharePoint, and post files, view files, edit permissions on files. This makes sense. You don't want the customer having to go through some sort of credentials challenge every time they try and interact with a piece of content on the corporate resource on the corporate network. The nice thing is that just like with the file picker, you don't need to declare enterprise authentication to get access to corporate resources. You can still go through the challenge prompt and get customers access to those things that they need or your app needs in order to get their job done. Think about this one again from an enterprise authentication perspective. Using our previous example, you can kind of stitch this story together as we walk through each of these. Imagine instead of him finding a clever way to get at my pictures library, I declared enterprise auth. Now, instead of just browsing my pictures library and posting some embarrassing photos that I didn't want the world to see, now they can browse my network. Whether it's my network at home and you're getting access to my media storage servers, or whether it's I'm a corporate employee and I'm inside of a private network here, now all of a sudden, these guys are going to be able to take advantage of that extra credential and potentially get a hold of things that are much more embarrassing than just photos of me with a lampshade on my head. And as I mentioned, the same misunderstanding around prompting for credential challenge, it's also not needed for your connected accounts. If you're integrated with Windows Live or you're integrated with some other cloud service, you don't need enterprise authentication to accomplish those things. It works just the same as it would without it. So you're going to get a challenge if you're not integrated, and customers can enter their data. You can persist that, and the customer moves forward without the additional risk. The last one, and this one is probably the most obscure, but it's one I've seen confusion on, is shared user certificates. If you're not a bank or you're not an enterprise that's doing VPN or remote access, you probably don't need this. You don't need to declare this particular one. The purpose for these is to enable access to the hardware and software certificates on the user's machine. This is most commonly found, and probably a bunch of you have this, on your smart cards. Like, for example, if I'm going to log into corporate resources over the public internet, I use my smart card to authenticate. If I had an app that did that, for example, the remote desktop app that's in the Windows Store today, it has the ability to use shared user certificates, and I can then access the content on the smart card. This is where you're going to find it. You're going to find it in financial institutions. This is very popular as two-factor auth starts to become more prevalent in banking apps. You'll probably see as well, if they want to step the security up one more degree, they're going to start using smart cards for authentication. Also enterprise apps, remote desktop, VPN, things of that nature, going to use the same capability. This is the other common misperception on this one. You don't need this to do SSL. It's supported natively. I've seen a lot of developers, again, trying to make things work, going, hey, I'm having trouble connecting my server. I'm not able to authenticate, or I'm not able to create an SSL connection. And they go check this box, hoping it's going to work. That's not the problem, right? So they continue to poke around and fix the problem. But then when you go back, they don't remember to uncheck the box I started checking. I'm guilty of this all the time, right? Like, give me all the capabilities. Okay, it's working. Now I figured out what my problem is, and I forget to uncheck them. I ship them up, and now I've overdeclared by accident. Now here's the last point for today. And this one is one that is very common in the news. All the other stuff we're talking about kind of gets distilled down to a report on some news site, and then the security wonks go figure out what the very specific piece of code that broke was, and they either issue a fix or a warning or do something to help customers and developers avoid it. This one actually ends up in the news, and customers hear this one, and it resonates with them. Like, I can't imagine how many times I've heard a commercial on the radio or the TV about identity theft. I'm protecting yourself, and buy my product because I have $1 million protection for you, or buy my product because I monitor every transaction and I'll send you an alert on your phone. For us as developers, the truth here is that in order for us to get that authentic, lively customer interaction, it's going to mean you need to know something about your customer, right? Simple things that we already saw is like username and password to access my server resources, but other things like location, right? You can imagine a restaurant app that you're going to tell me about restaurants that are near me. Well, if you need to know where I am in order to tell me if it's near me or not, otherwise it's going to be a little confusing when I put that into my GPS and I'm driving 4 hours for dinner. And so to do this, customers are going to let you have their data. They're going to want these scenarios to work, and they're trusting you to handle it properly. And so the first and most important point here is to be transparent with your customers through your privacy policy. If you go read the content certification guidelines as well as your developer agreement, we're very clear that you have to be honest with your customers about what you're doing. Now, this is good for our customers. Also, you as developers need to think about the legal implications of the data that you're collecting. It's your responsibility to make sure you're in compliance with the locale and the laws and the regions that you're shipping your app to. And different regions have much higher bars than others. And so being transparent here will keep you out of hot water, both in your certification time and with your customers and misunderstanding what you're doing and why you have their data, as well as keep you out of trouble potentially with authorities, because you've tried to be as honest as possible. You're not being sneaky. You know, we've seen, again, news reports about sneaky behavior and, hey, you're stealing my data, you're looking at things I didn't want to share. You guys are probably familiar with all that controversy. Just stay away from it. It's very easy to do. First, just be clear with your customer about what you're collecting. I'm going to use your location. I'm going to figure out your location from your IP address. I'm going to have your server name cached so that you know which server to go back to and you don't have to put the server back in. Just tell your customers you've got the place there in the privacy statement. You're going to include it with your app. You're also going to point to it on the web. The second thing to add here is to make sure you tell your customer what you're going to do with the data. Every once in a while, I'll be looking for an app on my phone or some other device, and I'll see something that wants to get my location data, my device data, my children's name, my social security number, and I look at this long list of things, and I'm like, what are they doing with all this? I can't even imagine why you need all that stuff. Here's your opportunity to let customers know in a transparent way what you're doing with their data. The next is to let customers know how to opt out. So you need to develop your app in such a way that if you don't have access to that data, one reason you might not have access to the data is because the device itself isn't provisioned for it. Think about trying to access GPS resources. You've got a machine that doesn't have GPS, right? You don't want a scenario where the customer consumes your app, they've got it on a device that doesn't support the functionality you're trying to use. Your app still needs to handle that graciously. You need to think about that as well if your data collection. If your customer opts out of sharing data with you, you need to fall back to a more generic experience. That way your app continues to work well, and especially considering people who have lots of different devices, right? You've got your bring your own device, and then you've got your corporate device. I like your app. I'm going to use it in both places, and the devices are disparate in their functionality. You don't want a broken experience for your customers. Here's the next big one. transmit and store your PII securely. I noted that in our exec unsafe local function example where we kind of fell down there in my little demo app. Because I'm using HTTP, anyone can see what's going on. If I have access to the network you're a part of, I can inspect what's going on. You need to make sure that as you're handling this content, you're ensuring that your customer data isn't accidentally leaked. Like, what happened to us in our demo wasn't accidental. Somebody tried to get me. But this happens in other ways. I've seen apps that are carried over from phone marketplaces where, optimistically, the developer is constructing a string to identify the user of this app, and then they're just passing it up to the server as a big, long URL. Anyone can look at that URL and figure it out, right? Don't do that to your customers. Make sure you're doing it, as well as storing it securely. So the example we saw, there we go. Leverage the credentials locker. So one of the things that I know will happen is you're going to, if you've got a client-server relationship, chances are you're going to have an account associated with it. Make sure we have a built-in credentials locker. Take that credentials management seriously. Put it in the locker. It's well protected. Now, in our particular demo, I purposely left the door wide open, right? It was concocted. No real apps were harmed in the process of showing you the demo. And so he was able to use the functionality that my app had. But if you're going to interact with this content, make sure that you're leveraging the credentials locker to do it. So you're storing it as well as using SSL in order to transmit it. And then the next point is PII. Normally when you do this, you're supposed to say, you know, personally identifiable information and then give the acronym at the end. I didn't do that here. So if you're not familiar with the term, PII means the information about your machine that can help me figure out who you are so I can point you out in the crowd. You want to make sure that you're not collecting PII. So serial numbers and IP addresses can very quickly get you into hot water. There are a ton of valid scenarios for making sure that I know it's this device and this app. For example, if you have a streaming service and you're only supposed to stream one device at a time, I need to make sure that your user account isn't being used on two different machines. I need to know the difference between machine A and machine B so that I can protect my stream. Again, that's a financial resource. You don't want everybody using it in the world. And what I see is people, again, with that same optimism going, hey, if I know the X and I know the Y and I add them together and take a hash, guess what? I can uniquely identify them. Well, the reality is there's a better way to do that. Consider using the get package specific token. This is functionality that we've included in the platform so that you can be guaranteed a unique value between the app on the machine and the machine, and it's not PII. So if you have to solve one of these scenarios, for example, marketing scenarios work this way. If you want to tell your advertisers, listen, you're going to see, you know, 300,000 unique installations of this, you can demonstrate that that is true without having to collect people's PII in order to demonstrate it. This is supported by the platform. It's baked right in. So with that, here comes the part where I go back through all these core topics. You put this all together, the confidence of your app is going to be evaluated cumulatively. As you saw inside of our particular demo, making some simple assumptions in my code and not following those secure coding practices, also not respecting the principle of least privileges, and handling customer data, my app wasn't layered in protection, it was a cascading failure. Right? One little mistake up front, and again, I want to remind you, I removed the safety net there in order to make that happen, so it was a bit contrived, but you can imagine other developers falling into this thing. Your app wants to be layered in protection, not a cascading failure, and that's going to impact the way customers perceive your app, and it's going to erode their confidence. And the reality is, as a community, we want to make sure we keep that confidence high across the board. We, again, want this unique environment where customers are not fearful about acquiring apps. And so that they're going in, they see the new app or the top 10 or the recommended app, they just go in and pick the app that they want without worrying about either having their PII exposed or, as we saw with Mr. Hack, just nonsense that I don't want to see in my app. And so, again, driving the point home at the end as developers, customer confidence leads to that worry-free app acquisition. We want people excited and playing with apps. My wife is a great example of this. She doesn't have the security mindset, but boy, is she excited about consuming apps. And so if you go look at her phone, she's got everything in the universe. She doesn't pay any attention to that. But when I go look at it, I go, wow, this thing's got your location. This thing's got your device identity. This thing's got, wow, I'm going to take that app off. Now, that developer may or may not have had any malicious intent. It may have been just like our little example. They were just trying to get their app to work. They're just trying to get things done. And now they've got an app that I looked at it with my mindset and went, I'm not installing that app. And I think customers will become increasingly savvy about what apps have capacity to do and what they're going to do with that capacity. And then applying that all the way down the line, that least privilege approach or to the capabilities and, of course, the handling of the customer data securely. Make sure you do those things properly, and you'll have an app that builds confidence, and customers will be excited to consume. And then again, depending on your financial model, it's going to be to your benefit to have an increasing number of customers playing with your app and enjoying your app. So with that, as I mentioned, if you go back and get the deck, there's a bunch more detail inside of those exec unsafe local functions, all of the information inside of the web behavior, giving you a much more detailed talk on some of those pieces, information about the capabilities themselves, if you want to go review the list and their uses, as well as that note on get package specific token. And with that, I thank you very much. I thank Chris and Mike for making the demo happen. And now we've got about 10 minutes or so for Q&A. Don't feel like you're rushed, as I mentioned. If you've got a longer question and you want to spend a little more time with us, we'll be over in Mount St. Helens room and available for you to talk to in more detail if you like. So any questions?
Can you administer with group policy which apps can and can't use your network credentials? So that if the user goes ahead and says use enterprise authentication, but as an administrator, an AD, I can say, oh, that's not a trusted source?
I'm not sure. I do know as an administrator, you can lock out which apps customers can choose.
Okay.
So if you had, as an administrator, a policy against apps with that in there, I know you can do that level of granularity. I don't know about the other.
The other quick question would be, the protection you mentioned in WinJS, is that essentially the same concept as like page out validation or an OWASP SAPI library, or is there something else going on there?
I'm going to hand that over to Mike. Mike is the WinJS expert. That's right. So just because Mike's not on a mic, I just want to summarize that very quickly. The point that Mike was making is that WinJS is going to require you to remove that safety net in order to accomplish some of these quote-unquote workarounds on auto-sanitization. That was the point I was making around not working around the framework to make things happen. The framework is trying to protect you from script injection and things of that nature, and you have to explicitly turn it off to get around that functionality. Yes?
So I just wanted to confirm, you know, a lot of the points you raised were fairly general, and they applied to all styles of coding we can do on the WinRT these days. But it looked like the first part of the talk was kind of JavaScript specific, and it looked like maybe there was more security concerns, whereas if I was doing C-sharp XAML, people couldn't really inject code into the visual tree there as easily as they can the DOM, for example. Is that still true?
That is still true. The reason we chose JavaScript as the example is not only the ease of integration with dynamic content, but also the fact that these models already exist today. You don't have to do a lot of work. If you've tried this, just pulling in a web app, just keep in mind some of those assumptions you made about your web server and running inside of a browser aren't necessarily going to be true in the Windows Store app. So yes, you're right on. Yes?
One question about enterprise auth and this kind of capabilities. I noticed on Windows RT, there's no domain join feature. And I was wondering how that plays within an app that is both for Windows 8 desktop, not desktop, non-RT and Windows 8 RT.
Yep.
Right? And how these things happen. And
yep. This is exactly the point I was trying to make and probably didn't make it clear, is that in those cases where you've got an app that's going to potentially span different devices with different capability, your Windows RT device is not going to be able to join the domain. So your app needs to be able to graciously fall back. You still can access domain resources. You're just going to have to go through the credentials challenge to take advantage of it. And then now you've got a customer that's familiar with your app working in two different concepts. That's that graceful fallback if you find there's a disparity between the platforms. And then the enterprise, when you have it available, is going to allow programmatic use of that. And again, keep your security hats on when you think about that. Maybe programmatic access isn't the right thing. Does that answer the question?
And just fall back. So specifically in my app, we are using, we query AD to get credentials to implement like a file system, whatever. And we just inherit all these permissions that are set up from the AD. Will it be able to do the same thing on WinRT, Windows RT?
I don't know the exact answer there.
Okay. So a little bit different, but as it relates to like protecting from piracy and stuff in the store, how is that working? Because like they're just sitting on your file system, so is there any protection from that? I guess especially for JS and just straight text and whatnot.
Yeah. That's a little bit longer discussion. I'd be happy to talk about it in the breakout room. There's a bunch of nuance there that I don't want to get into the security talk on. But come find me. I'll meet you over there.
Hi. Yes. When it comes to WCF, I've noticed WinRT is kind of limited because it doesn't support dub as HTTP binding and dub as federation binding. Do you know if support for this is planned in the future?
Okay. Hey, Mike, did you catch that question? I'm sorry. You got a deep conversation. I brought Mike specifically because he's going to be able to help with those questions. Maybe the two of you can hook up right after this and have that talk. And we'll move over to the Helen's room in just a moment. One more back there.
I'm just wondering if you have any static analysis tools or runtime tools to help work out what capabilities you need.
So we don't offer them currently, no.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I'm now out of the way between you and your food. Go and enjoy some food. Thanks.